Welcome everybody to this web event on Leading for Literacy, What Elementary School Administrators Need to Know. I'm Lauren Artsy, and I'm a coach with the Lead for Literacy Center and a senior researcher at American Institutes for Research. And I'm joined by Carol Disson. Do you want to introduce yourself, Carol?
Hi, everybody. I'm Carol Disson, and I'm from University of Oregon. Center on Teaching and Learning is who I work with. And we do a lot of work with comprehensive centers like Leap for Literacy, and we're out in the field all over the country. So we're super excited to get a chance to spend the next couple hours with you.
And this is the Leap for Literacy Center. The executive leadership team is led by Hank Fine, Allison Gandhi, Nancy Nelson, and Lana Santoro. Carol and I are on the Professional Development and Technical Assistance team, which Carol Disson leads, and there's also a dissemination team and then other project support. And we have partnership with WITA and NAIS. So welcome. And the collaboration for Lead for Literacy is the Center on Teaching and Learning at American Institutes for Research. And I'm Lauren Artsy, again, on the coaching team with the Lead for Literacy Center, and Carol leads out that professional development team, and we're both coaches on the center as well. For today's session, we wanted to really dive deep into the Lead for Literacy framework, which includes five elements that support schools and leaders in schools in developing their school-wide framework for reading within multi-tiered systems of support. So first, we wanted to start the session by just level setting around evidence base and the research base around effective reading and effective reading practices. Also talk about what the research says related to the effective systems needed in schools for effective reading practices and effective assessments for reading. We'll also talk about how to utilize implementation data for continuous improvement within schools. And then we'll get into the Lead for Literacy framework, which includes a section on standards, priorities, and goals, administration, organization, and communication, assessments, instruction and intervention, and then professional development and collaborative learning. We will be exploring resources and be doing some activities on the web related to exploring those resources. And in the chat, there's a couple of links that I did put up related to the resources that we will be exploring. So if you have a moment to connect with those links, that would be great. I'll show a couple of the sites now. One is the Lead for Literacy website. And on the Lead for Literacy website, we have, and I'll use my annotate, we have here a resource repository. So as we get into the framework for Lead for Literacy, we're going to be exploring resources in the resource repository, talk about how some of those resources might relate to your context and how those resources can be used as a school leader in implementing school-wide reading models within your context. The other resource that we will be looking at in just a minute is the What Works Clearinghouse Practice Guides, and specifically we will be looking at this practice guide here, which is the foundational skills to support reading for understanding in early elementary school. We're just using that one guide and exploring that guide on a deeper level as an example of what can be found in the practice guides. So these two links are in the chat box, and if you're able to open them up, that would be great because we will be in an active way be exploring these more through what we're calling a virtual scavenger hunt. Great, so we thought we would just start the session with, informal conversation in the chat. Feature of Zoom on what do you think are the most important considerations or needs that will lead to higher student reading outcomes? So if you want to think about your own context or other schools that you've seen, what do you think is really important for the school, the teachers, the administration in the school, and other leaders in the school to implement that will support students in achieving higher reading outcomes? And if you can just write a couple of responses in the chat, we can kind of communicate through the chat. And I also wanted to let everyone know that we'll kind of communicate through the Zoom chat, which you can find on your Zoom toolbar at the bottom. And then if you have questions at any point in the session, both Carol and I are monitoring the question pod. You can definitely feel free to put in any questions you have, and we'll address those as they come in. And Carol added in the links again, so the Lead for Literacy site and the What Works Clearinghouse Practice Guide. There's a response in the chat that something that's really important for that leads to higher student reading outcomes is really quality tier one instruction, quality core instruction. That's definitely really an important point. Using quality data to make instructional decisions is another response. Quality teaching strategies and training the teachers in a quality way and using those strategies. Carol, do you want to read some of the others that are coming in?
Yeah, so we curriculum, instruction, assessment, quality learning environment, teacher training on instructional practices, accurate, timely data that teachers can use to inform teaching, professional development. Great. These are all great considerations that we'll be able to give you a little bit of an overview of how our Lead for Literacy Center can help support those ideas and those considerations for sure. One just came in that making sure that we give time to our students to read. How novel is that? That kids actually have time reading, right? And practicing the skills that we are teaching them. So that really comes back to scheduling, right? That teachers are making sure that they have high quality practices in their schedule. And then teacher education in regards to strategies.
Great. And many of these responses can be found within the Lead for Literacy framework that we will be diving into later on in the session. So there's a section in the framework that talks about instruction and intervention, and we will be getting into what are the best practices and considerations in a tiered instructional system with that, as well as professional development. That seems to be coming through a lot in the chat. Great. So definitely keep thinking about this question, and at any point if you want to add to it or add to your response, definitely feel free to put that in the chat. And again, as we kind of get into everything, if any questions come up or there's any topic that you want to connect with more, definitely put that either into the chat or in the question pod. And this just shows, too, again, the question pad. So the question feature for participants should be on the bottom in your Zoom toolbox next to the chat feature. And so we're kind of using both in this session. And so as we're going into the session and we're talking about, first, what are the effective practices related to reading instruction within a tiered instructional system or MTSS? If you want to think about what are your questions, what ideas do you have as the session is taking place, any ahas that you have, what's going well, or what do you think should be improved, those are all things we can connect with and talk about today. So definitely feel free to keep adding to the chat or the question pod. Carol and I will be monitoring both. So, and this is, we're kind of calling it the parking lot. So, great. So before we get into the Lead for Literacy framework, which is a five-component framework that includes standards, goals, and objectives, administration, assessment, instruction, and professional development, and we'll really dive into each of those sections, we wanted to level set on really what do students need to be good readers, and what is the research foundations over through the five components, and what does the research say around what is needed for a child to be a successful reader in elementary school. We know there are challenges. In the 2017 NAEP, National Assessment of Education Progress, we know that 35% of fourth graders scored at or above the proficient level, which means a large majority of fourth graders scored below the proficient level. The NAEP data also shows a gap with children and students at fourth grade with disabilities were 12% scored at or above the proficient level. The 2019 NAEP was just released, and the scores are showing about a 1 point decrease across fourth and eighth grade reading. So, you know, we do know that there are some challenges overall with student outcomes, as well as some gaps in and so this session today will also really be addressing how to support students with disabilities or student with or at risk for, you know, a reading related issue in the school-wide reading model as well. But for what good readers need is the research really kind of shows two areas that a child really needs to be able to read in a way where they can read and understand what they're reading and assimilate academic content knowledge and academic language through their reading. So the first is what the research really kind of points to as these code-based skills. So the simple view of reading is one reading framework out there, but these components are evident across many models of reading. So in code-based skills, which is the decoding piece, it's kind of sub below the word or subword level, and it's someone's ability to, you know, see the letters on a page, understand the sounds that the letters correspond with, and be able to put the sounds and the letters together and read the text on a page. So it's their ability to transform the print into spoken language, read accurately, decode accurately, and read fluently. So that's one of the components of what a reader needs to be able to read in a way where they understand. We do know that there are some children who seem to decode and read fluently, but when they're probed on their understanding of the text with reading comprehension questions, there are some breakdowns. I think we can all think about students in our past that we've seen or students in our school that really decode fluently, but when, you know, we look at their reading comprehension, there are definitely issues. And so that really gets into what some of the research calls the meaning level skills. And that's the language comprehension component. So it's one's ability to understand text and spoken language. Vocabulary also fits into this language component. And to be an effective reader for also not just reading for decoding, but reading to understand what you are reading, you really need strong skills with both. And we like to show this through multiplication, because if there's an issue with any and it's zero, we know that you know, one times zero will be zero. And so we really want to understand with students who might struggle with reading comprehension if they struggle with the code-based skills or the meaning level skills or both. And you kind of see all those profiles in reading. So we know that the simple view of reading is kind of one way that illustrates how the reading process works and what readers need to be able to read and decode fluently, but also understand what they are reading. Kind of showing it another way, this is an infographic from the National Center on Improving Literacy. They have a host of infographics on different topics, but this really visually illustrates that simple view of reading, that if you're seeing letters, but there's breakdowns in the letter sound correspondences, or how to put the letter together in words and be able to decode, the meaning is going to be impacted. Likewise, if you can produce the sounds of the letters, but it takes a lot of effort and you're unable to read fluently, you know, you might get some kind of gist, but there's still breakdowns with comprehension. So this third area, having, you know, strong skills with those code-based skills and strong skills with, you know, decoding is really important, as well as having, you know, strong vocabulary and strong language comprehension skills to be able to decode the text, but also fully grasp the meaning of the text as well. And this is just another way that illustrates some of the research around reading-related processes. So this is the five components of reading. I'm sure everybody has engaged with the five building blocks of reading, has looked at the National Reading Panel, and this just kind of visually illustrates it. We did add in some information over here around concepts of print, letter recognition, and phonological awareness. This is actually comes out of the National Early Literacy Panel that really talks about the reading process and reading research in preschool context, just to show that preschool and those pre-K years really lay an important foundation for future readers in the pre-foundational literacy skills. But over here, we see the five components of reading that are talked about in the National Reading Panel, and that research since the panel has really continued to highlight that these five areas are really important for our readers. And so if we're thinking about it in terms of the simple view of reading or in terms of code-based and meaning level skills, we can sort of think about phonics and phonemic awareness as sort of some of those code-based skills you would need for good reading decoding, and then vocabulary and comprehension up here as more of those meaning-based skills. And a good reader who can read and comprehend will really have strong skills with all the building blocks. And then related to this, we also want to consider the nature of receptive reading skills and expressive reading skills, and also expressive writing skills and language and literacy skills. So receptive skills are more of those skills around understanding. Reading and decoding is more of a receptive skill. Listening is a receptive skill. It's around recognizing. But a child for language and literacy and academic language and academic performance also needs to have strong expressive skills as well. So that's in using the language. That's in speaking and writing. Encoding is kind of the expressive side of decoding, where a child has to now use the letters and sounds and to output the language in terms of writing for academic purposes. So it's producing and using is the expressive side. And we put this up here because the two go hand in hand. You tend to see receptive skills kind of developed initially, and then expressive skills come from it. And you may have children who struggle with decoding and encoding. So their reading decoding and their encoding for writing are both impacted. You may also have some students who struggle with one or the other. And so that's why, you know, considering the five components of reading and the code-based and meaning level skills, we just also wanted to highlight the nature of receptive skills and expressive skills. So now, we wanted to talk about what systems and evidence-based practices need to be in place to support higher reading outcomes. So we kind of talked about what's needed for the reading process, what good readers need, what types of skill areas a reader needs. And we know that there are years of research that really points to some effective systems-level components within multi-tiered systems of support, as well as effective evidence-based practices for reading, language, and literacy. So the first thing we wanted to kind of talk about that systems level piece. And we do that through, it's illustrated in the Lead for Literacy framework as targeting when you're thinking about a school-wide reading model within multi-tiered systems of support. You want to consider the standards, priorities, and goals, the administration, organization, and communication, and then consider the instruction piece with tier one, tier two, and tier three, and then also assessments, and really consider what are the data sources. So in thinking about the complexities of reading, the nature of receptive and expressive skills, and code-based and meaning level skills, what are the data sources that are being used in your school to shed light on students' needs and strengths around each of the different areas? How are you triangulating data? And then how are you implementing database decision-making processes at your school for the data systems? So the Lead for Literacy framework really ties all these five areas together into one framework. And this is what we're really going to engage with in this session. And what we're going to do is Carol and I are going to highlight each of the different areas, but then we're going to actually go and look at some of the resources on the Lead for Literacy site related to each of the areas. We also know that an important thing that ties all of this together is continuous professional development in terms of workshops and institutes, professional learning communities, and coaching for the teachers and also for the school leaders as well. Another systems consideration is multi-tiered systems of support. And we just took a couple of illustrations from other sources. One is from Lexio Learning, and the other one is just an umbrella graphic from South Carolina Department of Education, just to show how multi-tiered systems of support can be illustrated in different ways. Many states and LEAs and districts and schools are moving to a multi-tiered systems of support, which is a large system that integrates many things under the system. So it integrates behavior and academic and socio-emotional learning together into one cohesive system. You also see MTSS illustrated as this umbrella graphic that shows different elements under the umbrella. So you'll see, for instance, other umbrella graphics that will show PBIS under the umbrella, or here the tiered instruction is under the umbrella, database decision making and problem solving, leadership, professional development, building capacity and infrastructure. This is just one example, but it really is this umbrella system level approach to instruction that is tiered and guided by database decision making. And then the tiered instruction within MTSS provides a structure of support for all students, including students with disabilities. And we wanted to illustrate this with kind of the centerpiece of this graphic is really showing that students with disabilities are served throughout the model. So they may be receiving some intervention support at the tier two, tier three level, but they are still also served at the universal level of prevention through the inclusion of evidence-based practices to support students' learning and the different needs and differentiation strategies as well to support all students' learning at that level. And this is an example of one of the evidence-based practices that the research shows really supports students who might present with or at risk for reading-related disability. And this is explicit and systematic instruction. So really using explicit explanation of a practice, having the teacher model for the students, providing practice opportunities. Sometimes you see it called gradual release, where you know the teacher might model for the student, do an activity with the student, have them do it in front of the teacher, and then slowly release some of that back to the student. Appropriate pacing is another key component of explicit instruction, providing immediate corrective feedback and plenty of checks for understanding so that we can be sure that the instruction that is being provided to the student is really matched to their needs. Also, the other component to this is systematic instruction. So breaking activities into smaller steps and sequences, making sure steps are sequential, moving from more simple to more complex processes, and having students with prior knowledge and prerequisite skills, you know, keying them to that so they know what is the prerequisite skill required for a new skill. So now we're going to kind of, we've talked a little bit about some of the things good readers need for decoding and comprehending. We also talked a little bit about some of the systems level considerations. And within the evidence-based practices kind of space, we wanted to take a moment to do a exploration activity with everybody on this web event. So we'd like to kind of pause for a minute and have everybody go to the What Works Clearinghouse and look at one of the resources there that outlines some of the evidence-based practices that can be used to support students, all readers, in core instruction. But before we do that, we'll just explain that the What Works Clearinghouse is an area of the Department of Education, the Institutes for Education Sciences. And on What Works Clearinghouse, you can find a number of resources that highlight, you know, what are the best practices and evidence-based practices to support student learning. So they have reviews of individual studies. So when a study is looking at a certain component, there will be different intervention reports that detail the findings of the study, what population the intervention was studied with. You also have intervention reports, and you also have here practice guides. And these practice guides, there's a panel of researchers who have synthesized the research base over a number of years and have developed some key recommendations for the area that the practice guide explores. So if everyone is able to toggle over to the What Works Clearinghouse site. It's the IES.ed.gov link that Carol and I posted in the chat at the beginning of the session. And while you're opening it up, I'll just also continue to review that it's through the Institute of Education Sciences at the U.S. Department of Education. It evaluates and summarizes existing research, and it's meant to really provide educators and school leaders and teachers information to make research-based decisions related to different topic areas. So we're going to engage with the reading and language and literacy practice guides today, but there are practice guides on a number of topics. There's math-related practice guides. There's also some practice guides related to graduation, post-school outcomes. And over here, you can see the different practice guide products. So these were some that I highlighted earlier. So the intervention reports, there's quick reviews, single study reviews, and the practice guide is what we will focus on today. And there are 21 practice guides, and like I said before, they're geared towards many different topics. And these are the reading-related practice guides. So if you're on the site, you'll see for younger learners, there's a practice guide related to reading comprehension, foundational skills, and elementary writing skills, which I believe is highlighted today on the website. For older learners, there's a practice guide on adolescent literacy, secondary writing, and then there's also a practice guide related to reading within response to intervention or tiered instruction, and there's two different practice guides that relate to English language learners and instruction for English language learners. So if you haven't yet and you're able to, if you can go to the link at the bottom of this page. It's also in the chat. And we're going to do what we're calling a scavenger hunt activity with one of the practice guides. And the practice guide we're going to focus on is this foundational skills to support reading for understanding in kindergarten through third grade. We were earlier looking at some of the NAEP data, which was showing some gaps and some findings for fourth grade, so we thought we would kind of focus some of our exploration on this guide. And you can see in this guide that there are four recommendations that the panel of researchers who worked with this guide brought forward after synthesizing the research. So one recommendation really relates to academic language, teaching students academic language skills and structures. We also have one that's related more to kind of those code-based components we were talking about earlier, which is developing awareness of segments and sound and speech and how they link to letters. The other recommendation is teaching students to decode words, analyze word parts, and write and recognize words. And the fourth recommendation is ensuring that each student reads connected text every day to support reading accuracy, fluency, and comprehension. So that kind of gets it all those literacy levels we were talking about earlier. One mention is about this evidence level on this side. Because the research was synthesized with studies and all the practice guides in the first part of the practice guide talk about the criteria for study selection, how they synthesize the research, you'll see across all the guides that practices are showing with different levels of evidence. You can see here with this first one, teaching students academic language skills, it's showing minimal evidence. It's included in the guide because the researchers and experts who developed the guide really felt like this was an important piece and an important practice to support strong readers in elementary grades. But the research might be a little bit sparse in this area. So it doesn't mean that it's not an effective practice, it's just related more to the level of research from the studies that were included in the guide. So if you're at the guide, we're gonna take a couple minutes to just open the guide up. And if you can explore it, and for the scavenger hunt, If you can explore the guide for, which is the foundational skills to support reading for understanding in kindergarten through third grade, and if you can click on recommendation one, and again, this is just an example of, you know, exploring the guide, but recommendation one is teaching students academic language skills. And if you can go to page eight, which details how to carry out the recommendation, and then in the Zoom chat feature, type in one of the actions that you could take back and implement it in your school. So with this specific recommendation and how to carry out the recommendation, I think they highlight kind of three key considerations. So if you want to read that section, we'll take a couple of minutes, 2-3 minutes to look at that section, and then think about which one you think would be really relevant for your school and your context that you might want to take back to your school and engage the school staff and educators with. I think one's around vocabulary. There's a couple of other recommendations as well. So we'll kind of stop talking and give a couple of minutes, 3 minutes, for everybody to look at that section of the practice guide and type in the chat which area on page eight, how to carry out the recommendation you think you would like to take back. While you're looking, I'll just toggle over to the internet site where it has the practice guide and show you where to click for anyone who wants to see that. So it's the foundational skills to support reading for understanding. And then over here, this is the first, number one is the recommendation. We're just kind of looking at a little bit more. Again, just to explore it. It doesn't mean that, you know, we should prioritize this one over the others. And you can click here for show more, and then you can get into the recommendation that way. And it talks about the research behind the recommendation. It talks about some key considerations with the recommendation. And then down here on page eight is the section where it talks about how to carry out the recommendation. So this is the page that we're looking at. And Carol, I don't know if there's some responses coming into the chat yet about this.
Almost forgot to unmute myself. So Carrie said, engage students in conversations that support the use and comprehension of inferential language. Yeah, and so we'll see if some of, give people an opportunity to look at the others. And Heather, on the chat guide, Heather had a question on there. If you open up the chat on Zoom, in there we have put the link to the practice guides. So if you can't find it in there, I will also add it to the question and answer period where you, or section where you put that in as well. And I just want to follow up too with Heather, or now I'm saying Heather, with what Lauren was talking about also. When I'm out working in schools with leadership and they start asking questions about what should it look like for our EL population within our reading instruction, I always say, are you familiar with the IAS practice guides, and guide them through looking at the website, because it does follow the evidence of the research and it's in very clear language, hoping you guys are seeing that as you're going through that. And it just is something that you can put in front of teachers in their professional learning communities, and really supports the practices that are going to make a difference for those students in those different areas. So I really encourage you to take time to look at these practice guides with your staff. I see that Denise put on the chat, review the practice guides with the staff, and highly encourage that. I think it's some of the best professional development that you can do, particularly when we're really talking about the importance of using those evidence-based practices.
And you'll also see when going through across all the practice guides, there's some additional materials for many of the guides. So some guides come with some videos that illustrate the practice in the classroom. I know that the 2013 practice guide on supporting English language learners across content areas has, I think, 24 videos that illustrate the different recommendations. This practice guide also has a compendium of videos that's in a PLC facilitator's resource that goes along with it. That was developed by one of the RELs, and we'll talk about that more later. It also has a section, a material related to supporting children's language and literacy with these recommendations at home, so a guide for families and home as well. So the practice guides all have different resources that go along with them. Some of them have lesson artifacts, so lots of different things kind of go along, and they're all linked on the What Works Clearinghouse webpage.
Earlier too, I know when people were posting at the beginning and there was a question on there that somebody was asking about scheduling of time for students to read, you know, what they're interested in. So on this practice guide, if you look at recommendation 4, it talks about the importance of students reading connected texts, and there's some different ideas. It doesn't necessarily talk about the schedule and scheduling and how much time, but we can provide, we can direct you to some resources as we get further in our presentation as well.
I think we've had a few more comments about the inferencing, supporting and engaging students in conversations that support their use of inferential language. We have a couple that are related to just reviewing the practice guides with staff. So again, in staff meetings, PLCs, these are really great resources for that job-embedded coaching piece as well. And we also have a comment about how these three areas in this one recommendation are discussed, but the school is working towards seeing them in the classroom. And I think this will connect with some of the conversation that Carol's going to lead us through about utilizing implementation data and like principal walkthroughs and things like that. So for time purposes, we'll continue on, but we'll kind of through the session be toggling back and forth to, you know, some presentation as well as some exploring different resources through the Lead for Literacy Center and the What Works Clearinghouse as well. So now we're going to discuss the implementation data for continuous improvement briefly, and I think this really connects to Michael's comment about working towards seeing these in practice. You know, what are ways we can really look at and observe classrooms and collect data around how these practices are being used in practice. We know in developing any initiative, whether it's a school initiative or an initiative of the district, that continuous improvement is a really important piece. And this quote really kind of gets to the heart of it, where the principal of Harvard Elementary School says, "The last piece of advice I would give to an administrator would be to never be satisfied with your school or district's current level of performance. There's always room for improvement. An effective administrator continuously works with staff to reflect on the successful implementation of MTSS and how to make the system even more efficient and effective for students." So there are always things that are really strongly implemented and things that any school or context or district is really implementing strongly and doing really well, but there's always areas that could be implemented more. And so this continuous improvement process really allows for the continuous reflection of what is currently taking place and what, you know, can be done to really more strongly implement areas that, you know, might not be currently taking place or could be implemented at a deeper level. And we like to also show this with the Plan, Do, Study, Act cycle, which is over here, where, you know, coming together and planning, you know, for a certain area, doing it, so it might be, you know, implementing one of the practices from the practice guide in the classroom, but this study part is really key, reflecting on how it went. So, you know, what went well in the lesson, what could have been improved in the lesson, and then implementing that kind of learning from that reflection part, acting, and then going back into the cycle again. So it's always, you're always kind of in that plan, do, study, act cycle with continuous improvement. And so with that, the implementation data of the school becomes really important. And looking at implementation data when we're talking about reading and literacy within multi-tiered systems of support throughout the whole school, there's a lot of parts that should be considered. So the first piece that you might want to collect implementation data on is those school tiered instructional database decision-making processes that really are the essential components of MTSS as well as RTI. And there's some tools and some open access tools, also some tools on the Lead for Literacy Resource Repository that really can, you know, schools can utilize to look at their school RTI and MTSS processes. When we're talking about reading language and literacy, we also want to look at the literacy instruction that's taking place in the classroom across all the levels of the system. So the evidence-based practices that are implemented in core instruction, and our students who may be struggling readers or students who may have a reading-related disability, how are they being supported in core instruction? Is there some explicit instruction taking place, some systematic instruction and other evidence-based practices that are used in the core instruction? We can also think about it in terms of intervention. So examining some of the implementation data related to literacy intervention, is there progress being monitored at the intervention? How are interventions being individualized for students who are not responding to their tier two intervention? So that's the intensification of literacy intervention. We can also examine data related to assessment systems. So are we using the right assessments? Are the assessments getting us the right information about students' instructional needs and other things? Also, what do the database decision-making processes look like in the school, and are they effective? And we'll talk more specifically about those when we talk about assessment in the Lead for Literacy framework. We also, and I think this gets to some of the comments in the chat about looking at how some of these practices are being implemented in the classroom, want to think about, coaching and workshops as well. And how do they, there's some tools out there, some resources that, look at coaching effectiveness in the school as well as, workshop effectiveness. And family engagement is another piece that is helpful to explore with implementation data. So sometimes it might be surveys or focus groups, really understanding from the family how they're being engaged in the school and if there's areas that should be more strongly implemented there. And just to show an example of some tools that can support implementation, these are just two related to the component. I'll just go back to this slide. When we look at, for instance, classroom literacy instruction, and how are evidence-based practices being implemented in the classroom, these are a couple examples. We're not endorsing anything. We just wanted to disseminate what's out there and what's open access. And so these are some examples of some walkthrough tools for principals and leaders in the school to utilize in determining how practices might look in the classroom. And so one is the Florida Center for Reading Research Principal Walkthrough Tool. It's this one. And they have them for different grade levels and different areas as well. And then this one over here is an example of the reset rubric, which is from out of Idaho, and it's through Boise State. And it's an Institute of Education Sciences research grant that developed these rubrics in different areas of reading as well as math. And so these are just two examples of some tools that are out there that can help support if you're as a school leader doing some walkthroughs and you really want to see how some of these evidence-based practices are looking in your school. These are some tools that can be used. So now we'll pause for the parking lot and see if there's any questions that are coming through or if anyone has any thoughts or ideas about the implementation data piece.
Yeah, so I don't see any questions on there now, Lauren, but just as people are thinking and maybe putting, if they've got questions or ideas or ahas that are on there, just one of the things I did want to talk about was that reset rubric that was out of that Boise State and Lee Pesky Institute in Boise put together. We've been working on a project in Idaho that was using that, and where it came from and where we started talking about using it was how do we know when the student performance level is low? How do we know that it's a student issue and not an implementation or a delivery of instruction issue? So how can we look at evidence-based practices and literally collect data exactly like we do on students, so that then we're looking at student performance data and we're looking at the delivery of instruction for those evidence-based practices data? And not only are we looking at it in that term, so we're looking at, do we need to change something for the student, or do we need to change something for the instruction? And then going into our PLCs, going into our professional development, and making sure that we're simplifying what we're doing for the support that we're giving teachers, instead of just keeping piling on new things. But what is this data showing us that we need to focus on, instead of us just looking at our schedule and plugging things into the schedule for professional development, but being really clear on what is the data telling us from the implementation collection? What is this data telling us that we need to focus on our professional development? And what we're finding is we're really changing then student outcomes on a much higher level than if we're doing professional development in the way that our systems have been set up to do it in the past. So I wanted to add that in because I think it's been something for me that's super exciting that we're talking much more about with leadership, is going in and saying, if they say something's not working, meaning we provided professional development workshops and we're not seeing a difference in our student outcomes, how I go in now and talk is, what is your implementation like? You know, do you have data that shows you have a high level of implementation from that professional development? And if you don't have data that shows you have a high level of implementation, how can you say it's not working? So just some different things to think about, not only from instructional implementation, but for sure from all of the other areas on that previous slide that Lauren was talking about, collecting that data to make sure that you have all of implementation data and it's high quality in each of these areas. So I think it's something that we don't spend a lot of time talking about, and we should be. All right, let's go on then, and let's look at how the Lead for Literacy Center is going to support these things. So Lauren really set the stage for what are these big ideas, you know, that we want to focus on. And so how, as a center, are we going to work with you to make sure that we're supporting these different pieces? So this comprehensive center was funded so that we could provide technical assistance for school leaders. And the ultimate goal, as you can see on this slide, is to improve teacher implementation of evidence-based practices. So with that, we are going to be covering all students. So that's students with or without risk for literacy-related disabilities. So our center is targeting LEAs, or school leaders who support teachers. So all of you that are on this webinar, I'm assuming, are in that role that you're supporting teachers in implementing those evidence-based literacy practices. So then what the point is that we'll talk about a little bit more in depth in some following slides, it's not all on the leaders to do all of the work, but how are we providing that support that will go down to the teachers that are working with those students that will improve their capacity to implement? And then ultimately, it will impact students who are at risk for attaining full literacy skills. So how do we reach all of those students in improving their student outcomes? And then also we'll be doing some work with some regional technical assistance centers that ultimately would be supporting down at the school levels as well. So our focus is helping you recognize evidence-based literacy practice and facilitating those implementation practices. And how can you identify through instruction and intervention programming and professional development that includes coaching? And coaching doesn't mean you have to have a person with a coaching title, but how can that look within your building based on those staffing that you have? So we have three different areas of technical assistance that we're providing. So like today, it's considered a universal technical assistance. Obviously, we only have 2 hours with you. So it's very much an overview of and an introduction of what we can provide through our website, through different tools, through different documents that we can disseminate through the resources, which for the second hour will be really diving in and doing a deep look into our Lead for Literacy resources that we put together for you. We're a very new center. We just started, oh gosh, Lauren, I don't remember exactly, beginning of the summer, early or late spring, I think of when we started in 2019. So we're continuing on a day-to-day basis. We're vetting different tools that can be used on the website, as well as we're in the process of developing instructional modules, and webinars like this will be available on the website as well, so that we can break down each of these elements and provide more in-depth resources, more in-depth training in these areas, and those will be available on our website as well as we continue to have time to get those out there to you. Then we'll be providing some targeted technical assistance. So those will be out at the state level. As an example, we're doing our kickoff one next week in the state of Indiana. So we're going to be providing 3 days of professional development, 2 days next week and 1 day later on in the school year to principals and leadership throughout the state of Indiana is kind of our kickoff targeted technical assistance. And we'll be providing additional targeted TA throughout the country as well in the next few years. And then in years 3 through 5 of our first 5 years at the Lead for Literacy, we'll be providing some on-site coaching and school building leaders with intensive technical assistance. So we're pretty excited to be able, through these different projects, we'll be able to provide more resources on our website as well. So what is the framework? So this is right off of our website, which we'll be looking at in a minute, but these are the areas that we're really focusing on in the framework. So the standards, priorities, and goals. And as you can see, Lauren was talking about the framework earlier, but she was doing it within the concept of, or in the context of the multi-tiered systems of support. So as you can see, this is very integrated within that same model, because what we know from the evidence from the research that these are the components that are really important that you have in place in order to have effective student outcomes. So we have the standards, priorities, and goals, administration, organization, and communication, assessments, instruction, and intervention, which includes all three of the tiers of instruction. And then the last one is the professional development and job embedded collaborative learning. So on our website, we have a resource repository, which we'll spend some time within this second hour, and you'll be able to dive in and see what those resources are in each of these. We'll spend some brief time looking at the standards, priorities, and goals, the administration, organization, and communication, and the professional development. But obviously, the meatiest part of these elements are the assessments and the instruction. So we'll spend a little bit more time today talking about the assessments and instruction. but please continue to come back to the website and be looking for the modules as we add in these additional resources to our website as well. One of the things that we want to talk about as far as leadership goes is we know how important leadership is. It's second to teachers as far as guiding students to those higher reading outcomes. But we also know that an effective leader isn't doing it on their own, that it's not up to that leader, because we know what happens in that model of a leader doing it all on their own, that leader leaves and moves on to something else and everything crashes within that building because you start all over again. So an effective leadership model is diversifying, meaning you're engaging others within your building within that work. And as you can see on our slide here, that what that gets for you is buy-in from the people. You have more sustainability. Again, if the leadership leaves, if you've diversified those roles and you've made sure that everybody's involved in that, that when the leadership goes, it just doesn't go with the leader. And it also addresses that turnover, not only from the leader, but from the other staff members as well. So it's not dependent on the leader. It's not dependent on the coach. It's not dependent on a teacher leader that has a strong voice within the building. So leading by convening talks about everyone is a leader, everyone is a learner. And what we know in effective schools, that is the model that leaders will use. So one of the things that we do that we're spending a lot of time in our targeted technical assistance working with leaderships is the school-based teams. So how are we making sure that not only are we providing these the professional development, and we're giving the information to our building staff, but how are we ensuring that that practice is getting down to the students? And one of the ways that we can do that is by teaming and making sure that we're using information in a way that is manageable for staff, not providing one more thing, but we're leveraging all of the things that we're working on within our building to make sure that we're simplifying and we're moving those practices all the way down to the classroom and the student level. One of the things that we see a lot when we're providing technical assistance out in buildings is that there are 100 different things that we're throwing at teachers within a school year and asking them to implement, and asking them to use, and asking them to do well, and asking them to implement. And in reality, teachers don't have the capacity to do that. And so in reality, what happens is they end up doing nothing different than what they've done the last several years that is at their comfort level. So just really briefly, I wanted to talk about this teaming. A lot of schools don't necessarily use the names that we're using on here for these school-based teams. And that's okay. It doesn't really matter that you don't use these terms. And you might cover the purposes that we're going to talk about in two different teams as opposed to three teams. And that's okay too. But what we're just trying to work with leadership is, do you have these purposes of these teams built in to your structure within your building? So the first one is the implementation team, which is the NTSSR team, which might be another name that you call it. Some buildings call it leadership teams. And that's a team that's really working on the systems level implementation. Do you have an effective schedule so that you have a 90-minute reading block within your building? Do you have an additional time for intervention outside of that 90-minute block? So it's not the principal that's responsible for setting up the team or the schedule, but it's a leadership team that's setting it up. So another way that you can look at it with this leadership team is, I apologize, there's a really loud truck going by. So if that's interfering with the volume, I apologize for that. But what this leadership team is doing is looking at the curriculum that you have. And looking at the schedule that you have and looking at the staffing that you have and looking at the database decision making and the tiers of instruction that's in there as well. So any of those multi-tiered systems of support, like Lauren said in the chat, and making sure that those are in place. So people on the team that you would want to have for implementation is you would want to have your principal or your school leadership. You would want to have grade level representations. You would want to have specialist representation, school psychologist representation. You might have paraprofessionals. You might have parents that are in on that team. And they really are shared leadership decision making, building that strong multi-tiered system of support in place and articulating what that system of support is that would be in place for that as well. And then the other one, the other team that we show on here is the data team. So often these are grade level teams, that leadership is involved, that specialists are involved, that the principal is involved in as well. They're meeting on a monthly, basis, and the whole goal is instructional decision making and intervention planning. So they're monitoring the data on a monthly basis. They're analyzing it. They're identifying those instructions that are those students that need tier two intervention. They're sharing and communicating the changes in the data, and they're coordinating those instructional decisions across those tiers of instruction for the grade level teams and those support people that are working with those grade level teams. And then the last team that we talk about is the professional learning community. So the PLCs, those collaborative learning teams, those teacher study group teams, whatever you're calling those collaborative learning teams. Often what has happened with these PLCs that we see when we go out and provide technical assistance is we see that these teams are doing a lot of admiring of student performance data, but they're not really expanding on what they're learning in their professional development workshops. So what we're really trying to promote when we're working with leaders is how are you using those professional learning workshops on a monthly basis that these grade level teams are meeting together, and they should be expanding on that work. So they should be looking at how are we implementing what we learned in our professional development workshop, and they should be trying out practices. They should be looking at videotapes of exemplars, you know, that are implementing whatever your professional development plan is built around, and they should be communicating with each other as a team on what did you try out this month? How did that work? Did you see an improvement in your student performance data? This is what I tried out. Oh, I'm going to try that next month. So there should be that monthly opportunity that they're expanding on their professional learning and that they're talking about implementation and that they're looking at implementation data to see, do we have high quality implementation based on what we're learning? So some of the people in the chat earlier when we were looking at the practice guide, it's not just about having a professional development on what are those evidence-based practices. That's important because that's setting that stage. But what is that rollout on a monthly basis, and that we're actually making a goal and setting an action of how we're changing practices that month. And it's not changing 100 things in the month. And I always say to people, choose something that you're focusing on. Just choose something instead of getting so overwhelmed with all of these things. Choose something that you're going to go and change within your instruction and your implementation and set that as a goal and communicate that with everybody as a goal. go in and try it within your school, within your classroom and your student setting, and then come back next month and debrief on how it went. This is what I did, and this is how it went, and have that expectation as a leader that you have that cycle. So when we get to the professional development section, we'll talk a little bit more about that and provide you with some resources to kind of shore up what you're doing with that. But the idea that we wanted to talk about with this is having these three school system, school-based teams, and the importance of that process in place. You're not leading each of these necessarily, but what you're doing is facilitating and coordinating. So you're making sure somewhere within your school system, you have these important teams in place that are supporting that. They might be working in conjunction with some other teaming that you have in place, and that's fine. What we don't want to do is add on more teams, but how can we leverage those teams that we already have in place? And how are you facilitating and coordinating this to make sure that you're improving those MTSS systems within your building that is changing practices? So let's look at our Lead for Literacy website. So if you haven't had an opportunity yet, I want to make sure that you're going to our website, because we're going to dive deep in this last hour and provide some different resources in each of the elements. So if you go to leadforliteracy.org, so it's pretty easy. I always Google Lead for Literacy and it takes me right to it. So leadforliteracy.org, go to the website. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through each of the elements and we're going to describe for you what are the resources that if we don't have them on the website now, we will as the next month, 2 months, and certainly this next year, we're going to be continuing to add a lot of resources that will be coming up. So the first one that I want to talk about is the standards, priorities, and goals. And the idea with the standards and priorities and goals, actually, before I start with that, with all of our elements that we're talking about, you'll see these blue topic buttons that we have on this slide. When you go to the resource repository, you'll be able to find resources with each of the elements that are on there. But what we're going to be adding to our website is a page for each of these elements. So you'll be able to go specifically to standards and priorities and goals. And you'll be able to click on the topic button, and the topic buttons are going to be reflective of what we have on this presentation right here. So in standards, priorities, and goals, we have standards, prioritizing standards and initiatives, student goals, action planning, and communicating guiding principles with families and stakeholders. So you'll be able to go to our website, go to standards, priorities, and goals, click on any of those topic buttons, and it will take you to resources that we are in the process of developing, as well as we're disseminating resources from other areas as well. So the standards, priorities, and goals, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this one, but what we want to do is make sure that we're guiding schools and leaders are guiding to those college and readiness standards. But the big idea is how are you focusing your schools on the most important goals? How are you providing action planning that's going to improve reading instruction and ultimately improve reading outcomes for students? So that's always the big idea with those standards, priorities, and goals. So what I want you guys to do, if you've made it to the Lead for Literacy Center, I want you to go to the top and click on the resource repository right at the top of that screen. And once you click on that resource repository, we're going to guide you through finding some different kinds of resources so that when after this webinar is over and you're planning some continued professional development with your team, you'll be able to go to the Lead for Literacy site and find some different kinds of resources to use. So if you look on the left-hand side of the resource repository, at the first part of that section is by framework element. So right now I want you to click on the standards, priorities, and goals, and you'll know you've clicked on it because it will have a check mark next to it. So once you have that check mark there, now I want you to go to the bottom where it says by resource type, and I want you to click on document. And once you click on document for on there, click on apply at the bottom. So you'll need to make sure that underneath both of those, you click on apply. So that applies those filters is essentially what we're doing. And you will see some different resources that come up. And one of the resources that are on there says standards that are relevant instruction and MTSS literacy examples. So click on that resource, and I want you to pick one of the literacy examples to explore more. So there'll be a green table that's on that webpage. In just a minute, I'll have Lauren pull that up and show it to you. There'll be some literacy examples. And then in the chat feature for here, just go ahead and type in the literacy example that you explored. So we'll give you just a few minutes. It's a great resource that ties back to the standard for literacy. So we wanted just to show you how you can access that as it relates to the standards, priorities, and objectives. So I'll give you a few minutes, and then Lauren, I'll have you show them as well.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Carol. And this just shows the two filters for document, and this is the resource over here. It's on the L4L repository, but it's from the National Center on Intensive Intervention. You click on it, you get to this page, and it has math examples as well as literacy examples, and you can click on one, as Carol was saying, that you want to explore more. And what it does is it shows a college and career ready standard at the top and how that standard might look across all tiers of instruction. There's a comment that came in. Someone's exploring the decoding example.
Good. Somebody else went to the phonics and phonological awareness section. All right. So, and I realize we're limited to 2 hours, but again, what we want to do in this one is take you to each of the framework elements, and then we'll have you explore in each of those elements as we introduce those as we go through. All right, so what I'm going to do then is we'll move on to the administration, organization, and communication objective. And on this one, the topics that we'll be developing more resources in and covering is the reading knowledge base, which goes back to what Lauren started at the beginning of today's session, just really understanding those elements of reading that are important in order to get students to those higher outcomes. And then the second one, the second topic that we explore in this area is reading systems implementation. And that's, again, specifically looking at those MTSSR elements. And are you, have you evaluated that you have all of those elements in place? And if you don't, putting in some action planning ideas and goals on how we can make sure that all of those assessment or MTSSR systems are in place. And then school implementation teams. So that goes into what I was talking about right before we started this, making sure that it's that distributed leadership and that administration is coordinating with that. We talked briefly when people were putting in some chats at the beginning, the importance of having a master schedule, that do you have a 90-minute reading block? Do you have additional 30 minutes? So making sure that that master schedule is in place, high-quality staff and resources are in place. I can't tell you how many times we're out in buildings and we talk about evidence-based practices and having high-quality materials in place. And either one of two things happen. Teachers say, well, we don't have those materials, or they say, we have 10 different kinds of materials. What should we be using? So making sure that staff has the right training, the right professional development, and that you have the right resources in place. The next button is leadership presence. When we're talking about leadership presence, it was really interesting as we were putting together some training modules with this. And I was talking to a leader about this. And one of the things that we said, really simply, we could show this in one slide that says, be there. With the idea is you're not just sitting in your office dealing with all of the administrative tasks, which we realize are overwhelming to leadership as well. But that importance of what we know effective leaders that get those students to the higher reading outcomes, they have a presence out in the school. They're out in classrooms. They're out in the lunchroom. They're greeting students when they're coming in the morning. So it's really that overall presence of being there with students, because what happens is those are the leaders that really know what's happening out in the buildings. And then the last one is the family communication and engagement. So we work really hard at providing information to schools on what are the high quality way that leadership is supporting that families are engaged in all of the processes within the buildings and within the schools. So let's go back to the website and let's look at something else with leadership. So if you go to the resource repository again, what we want you to do and what you need to make sure that you do is unclick anything you had clicked before. So if you still had it open and you had standards, priorities and goals selected, make sure that you go to that and unclick it. And you should only have administration, organization, and communications selected. And same thing with the resource type. Unclick what you had selected before and make sure that you only have video selected. And select that. And then again, make sure that you apply at the bottom so that that filter changes what comes up to the right of your filter resources. And type in the Zoom what resource that you find once you look for videos for leadership. Yeah, so Sandra put on here educational and school change video. So mostly two, and there's Lauren put it up there. As you can see, only one video came up for this one. Certainly, we encourage you to look at the other elements and select video. There's some great modules and things for some of the other elements that come up as well. But the video that comes up there is from Vanderbilt, and it's a great one that talks about effective leadership and what are some of those practices that effective leaders engage in. So it's one that certainly you could go back to, and I think it's just about 4.5 to 5 minutes, so it's not very long, but it's a great one to use for a leader as you're reflecting on some of those practices that you have in place. All right, so let's go back here to the next piece, if I can. There we go. And I don't see any questions on there yet. Again, we encourage you to put anything on as we go through. We'd be happy to answer any questions that come up. So Lauren, I'm going to have her spend a little bit more time with the assessment and the instruction as well.
Great. Thanks, Carol. And definitely feel free if there's any questions. I'm sure with assessment and instruction, there will be, you know, questions and reflections. Definitely feel free to use the chat in the parking lot. So with assessments for school-wide reading programs within a tiered, MTSS model, we want to think about the types of assessments and data. So really, what is our assessment, portfolio? What are the different things, that the assessments are really looking at? When we talked earlier in the session about, the five components of all the different components of literacy, receptive, expressive, what are the assessments that are used in our building, and what are they really looking at, and how are we coordinating the assessments and triangulating the data to really get a good picture on each and every one of our students for academics and reading and math, but also behavior, because we know that the two are connected as well. Specifically within that, we want to think about screening for reading. So screening is something we talk about in multi-tiered systems of support as happening at that tier one core level of instruction. It includes all students. Some of the guidance for screening is that it takes place, multiple times in a year, three is a good kind of number because screening is really meant to, catch students before there are issues, kind of catch them before they fall is kind of a quote that people talk about with screening. It's like anything with screening. When we go to the doctor and get our blood pressure checked, that's a screener. So screening for reading is one of those areas that we also want to think about. For students who are receiving intervention or as a second stage in the screening process, we also want to think about progress monitoring. So this area, we have it in the framework as monitoring reading progress. So for students who are receiving intervention, how do we continuously collect data to shed light on the student, how the students are responding to intervention, what their needs are, what diagnostic data are we looking at, and if we're intensifying intervention, how are we collecting data to really look at if that intensification is working for that child. Now, this is sort of the what piece, you know, the different data, screening and monitoring progress is kind of the what, you know, like what are the tools that we're using in our buildings. But if we think about the how piece of it, it's really around our database decision-making process. And Carol highlighted that when she was talking about the teams and the teaming structures. And so we want to think about like how the data is being collected, how the teams are used in the school to really engage in database decision-making. And then we talked a little bit at the beginning about using implementation data. That's, you know, to shed light on language and literacy instruction, our MTSS essential elements, implementation level in the building, as well as staff and teacher and educator responses to professional development, coaching and workshops as well, and ways we can monitor family engagement and really use that in a continuous improvement cycle. So just briefly to get, we wanted to get in a little bit to some of the content around assessments and instruction, but also mindful of the time. So with assessments, we talk about, you know, there's diagnostic assessments, which happen before instruction, and they identify students' skills, strengths, and weaknesses, and really can be used to help identify, you know, what type of instructional supports would, a certain student benefit from. Formative assessments happen during instruction. That's kind of our check for understanding, and it really helps us to understand, how students are engaging with their learning environment. If anything needs to be revisited or reinforced, that really is the formative assessment. And then summative assessment is, kind of the assessment for after learning and how did, you know, what did students acquire in a learning event related to that. If anyone's in a position of selecting assessments, so like selecting screeners or progress monitors, a couple of considerations when selecting an assessment tool. You want to think about, obviously, the skills that are being assessed. And for reading, that's really important because we saw in the beginning how complex the reading process is. So really, what skill, what area of reading and literacy is the assessment looking at? Is it looking at vocabulary? Is it looking at phonological awareness or phonological memory in the code-based skills? Cost is always a consideration. What is the administration? Is it group administered? Is it individually administered? What's required in the administration and the training of the test administrators? How is the data being managed? Some tools and resources come with databases and systems already. If not, what are the systems that are in the school to manage the data and to inform the different teams that Carol talked about earlier in engaging with the data, both on the academic and behavior side and integrating that data together? And we also want to think about the technical rigor of the assessment, so the validity and reliability of the assessments. And I just wanted to unpack that a little bit more in that, we talk about reliability is the, measure, is the assessment performing as we would expect each time, or is there really a difference if you give the assessment at like a certain time of day? So reliability is one of the features of technical rigor. Validity, is the assessment measuring what it's supposed to measure, or are there issues around its validity? Here, classification accuracy and sensitivity is an important component, especially with screening. So is screening accurately, is a screener that you're using in your school accurately identifying a child who is presenting at risk for a reading-related issue. If it's over-identifying students, so there's a lot of false negatives or under-identifying false positives, that's an issue in the classification accuracy. Sensitivity is something that we talk about a lot with progress monitoring, a little bit with screening, in that is it really sensitive to measuring change, learning change in smaller increments with students, and with monitoring progress at intervention to ensure that students are responding to their intervention, sensitivity of the measure is really important. And then alternate forms. This is, some assessments don't have alternate forms, and there's then parameters on how often you can give the assessment. So for instance, there's one that doesn't have an alternate form, and you can only give it once every year because there's a risk of carryover effects or, you know, some inflation if it's given too soon. But many of the screeners and other assessments will have alternate forms that are equated. So you want to look at, you know, where you can use different alternative forms and give it at more frequent windows. So alternate forms is an area you'd want to look at too. There's a lot of tools that kind of help in determining, you know, whether an assessment is reliable, you know, what the evidence is behind an assessment's reliability and validity. And one of the tools is the tools charts on the National Center for Intensive Intervention. There's tool charts related to screeners for reading, progress monitoring tools for reading and math, and there's also an intervention tools chart as well. And a team of experts and researchers came together at different points in time to really look at the assessments, and they rated the assessments on different criteria, and you can see that within the chart. We'll be exploring the tools chart in a moment when we get to that piece in the exploration part, but I just wanted to kind of highlight the tools charts from NCII. And related to kind of the how, you can think about relating some of the team processes back to the tool chart. So having the team in the school really explore the tools chart, really look at the assessments that are being used in the school and what the data is saying in terms of its reliability and validity, determine your needs and priorities, review the data in the chart, and then make some decisions or get additional information in that process. And since we'll be exploring it in a minute, we wanted to just show you for each of the tools out of the tools chart, you know, it talks about the cost, it talks about, you know, administration procedures and resources that are needed for implementation of the tool, different services and support structures, you know, if there's like helplines or, you know, things to help with the administration, what the purpose of the assessment is, kind of what construct it assesses in reading and math, and then how scores are reported, how the assessment's used. So it has a lot of different features on it as well. So just briefly, I talked about this already, but screening, the purpose of screening is, you know, to catch students essentially before they fall and identify students who are at risk for poor learning outcomes who then might benefit from additional instructional supports and intervention. So the focus is on all students, and these are tools that are brief and reliable, and they have classification accuracy. The guidance is to administer them more than one time per year. We tend to see them administered in the fall, winter, and spring because that gives a good data point for, you know, how students are engaging across the year in their content. And again, this just kind of shows that information in a different way. You know, it includes all students. The screeners assess educationally relevant outcomes, and you can think about it too. You know, what are the assessments looking at in terms of reading and literacy, and that they identify students at risk for poor learning outcomes. These are just some examples of some reading screeners at different grade levels. And so you can see, for instance, the phoneme segmentation fluency tends to be given more at the early elementary grade, whereas maze and maze fluency is kind of given more in the upper elementary grades. For progress monitoring, the purpose and the focus is on students who are identified through screening or who are identified as at risk for poor learning outcomes who might be receiving intervention. And these are brief assessments that are valid, reliable, and evidence-based, and students are assessed on a more regular basis than with screening, because the purpose with these is to understand the student's response to their instruction at the core level as well as intervention. And for a student who's receiving intervention, this is really important to see if they are responding to their Tier 2 intervention, because if not, there are different intensification strategies that can be used to help support them with their intervention. And so progress monitoring data basically allows us to determine, you know, estimate the rate of improvement for students across time. So how, you know, how much should we expect rate of an improvement for a student? We can compare the efficacy of different forms of instruction and intervention with progress monitoring data, identify students who are responding to their intervention or students who are not responding to their intervention to help inform if intensification is needed with the intervention, and then determine if an instructional change is needed with that student. And then the how of all of this, the database decision-making process. It's important to look at the data at all levels of the system, so across all the tiers, but also with, you know, the school level as it relates to the district level, and then the state level and the student level as well. And to look at the data related to instruction. So sometimes if we see, you know, more students identified, you know, for or receiving intervention, you know, typically the model, the tiered instructional support model, as one of the earlier slides showed, shows that, you know, roughly about 15% of students should be receiving intervention. If you're noticing in your school kind of that triangle, 30 or 40% of students are receiving intervention, and the data showing that, that might tell you that, you know, there might need to be more inclusion of evidence-based practices in core instruction, or, you know, kind of looking at core instruction and how core instruction is supporting students. Data can shed light on that as well. So using the data to compare and contrast, you know, that core curriculum, is the core instruction effective for students, and how students are responding to their intervention is also important with database decision making. So we're going to take a moment to go back to the Lead for Literacy resource repository. And this time, we're going to click on assessments. So we're going to unclick everything from the prior section, click on assessments, and click on tools. And so I'll do that too. And earlier in the session, I highlighted the tools chart that provides some additional information about screeners, progress monitors, as well as there's also an intervention tools chart. And so if you can click on tools and then select one of the tools chart resource links for either screening or progress monitoring, and just explore it a little bit more and see if you can find any of the tools for screening or progress monitoring in your school on the chart. And just let us know in the chat if you found your tools. And if there's any kind of ahas related to what the chart is showing or any questions. And just to show you, so I filtered for assessments and tool. And so up here, it's these two links that we would click on. So if you want to explore progress monitoring more, you would look at this one. If you want to explore screening more, you'd look at that one. We'll just take a few minutes to explore. And while you're exploring, I pulled up, I think this is the progress monitoring one, but you can filter, there's additional levels to filter for here. So you can filter by grade or content area, and you can also filter for more of those expressive literacy skills as well. And you can click on, you know, it gives you some additional information out here with its reliability and validity, but pretty much everything is hyperlinked and gets you to more information with this chart. And so you can click on the assessment itself to get more information, or you can also click on any of these circles, and it explains how the technical review committee for the center arrived at the level it did. And then there's some other resources that are linked on the page as well. Great. Well, for time purposes, we'll go on to instruction and intervention, and then I think we'll kind of stop for another parking lot check. But for instruction and intervention, again, it's another really meaty topic that we get into at a much deeper level with targeted our targeted technical assistance activities. But with instruction, you know, we want to think about instructional time and quality and instructional adjustments as well. And so, you know, differentiation in the core level of instruction, as well as intensifying intervention for those students that our data is showing us may not be responding adequately to their Tier 2 intervention platform. And so within instruction too, when we think about kind of that tiered level of instruction, we think about instruction at the core level of instruction, so instruction for all students and how they're supported in core. Tier 2 intervention in support, so students who may be showing with or at risk for, you know, reading-related disability or struggles and might benefit from receiving a Tier 2 intervention. That piece is also part of this instruction piece. And then for those students who are not responding to their Tier 2 intervention, kind of a systematic approach to intensifying intervention in Tier 3 for those students. And one way to think about it, too, in terms of leadership is looking at kind of the resource allocation across all the levels. So is there sufficient time built into the schedule for Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 instruction? What does the staffing look like and the staffing patterns look like across all the tiers? And what materials are used at each level? So there's an intervention tools chart that's also kind of housed with the tools charts on the National Center for Intensive Intervention. And this is just sort of a framework flow chart where we can think about Tier 1 core instruction, you know, as really targeting those kind of five components of reading and literacy, but that core instruction should be differentiated to meet the needs of all students in Tier 1 instruction. And we can differentiate in a number of different ways. This graph is showing, you know, differentiating for kind of different risk patterns or also students who may need enrichment as well in their Tier 1 instruction. And then Tier 2 intervention is for students who demonstrate risk and would benefit from additional intervention that is intensive, systematic instruction focused on the reading skills and foundational reading skills. And then Tier 3 is intensive intervention that is for students who are showing minimal progress or not showing progress with their Tier 2 intervention platform, and the intervention needs to be intensified to better meet the needs of the student. So it needs to be individualized in different ways. Maybe, you know, it needs to be implemented at additional points in time or from more one-on-one. So there's different ways to intensify it. And this just illustrates, again, kind of some of the things I just talked about, you know, timing for reading instruction, that this takes place in core and general education settings, using evidence-based practices for reading and literacy that are talked about, for instance, in some resources like the practice guides that we looked at earlier, and including explicit and systematic instruction that's differentiated based on students' needs. And that within this, students are screened so we can see if there's students who might be presenting at risk in a certain area. For intervention, this is for students who are showing at risk or showing as struggling in an area based on their screening. And that's the Tier 2 intervention platform. And that really it's using intervention that is evidence-based, systematic, and focus on up to three foundational skills. And then for intensification, for students who are, you know, not showing adequate progress in their Tier 2 intervention, does there need to be any intensification that takes place so that student is better supported with their intervention in Tier 3? And so an example of an intensification framework is we can see here that, you know, the National Center on Improving Literacy, and the link for this is down below, but it looks at how you might intensify instruction related to the components of reading. So for instance, if you know a student is struggling with vocabulary and you're intensifying a little bit, you might promote processing by prompting students to use target vocabulary words in spoken and written language. And maybe it's through some scaffolding within core instruction, but it might also be taking place in their intervention. There's also cognitive processing and self-regulation strategies that can be used. So modeling with think alouds is one of the examples of how something might be able to be intensified. Doing modeling and demonstration and integrating writing for the purpose of note taking. These are all different examples of self-regulation cognitive processing strategies for intensification. And self-efficacy is another area that can really help support students with their attribution as well. One of the things to consider across all tiers is just considerations for subgroups. So for instance, students with or at risk for dyslexia, the research shows that it's helpful to give step-by-step instructions in core instruction and in intervention, repeat directions, provide notes and graphic organizers, things that really support the visual, our visual routes as well, use small group teaching, pre-teach new content. For students with autism, providing models to show desired behavior, including prompts, providing positive reinforcement after a learner engages in the desired behavior, and providing peer-mediated instruction. So peer-assisted learning is one of them, peer-to-peer kind of intervention with some explicit and systematic instruction. The research shows really helps to support those students with reading. For English language learners, and there's a couple of practice guides on What Works Clearinghouse, which talks about the practices as well, using direct and interactive teaching approaches, providing some explicit vocabulary support and instruction, not just explicit, like, you know, explaining the words and definitions, but also helping students become better independent word learners through word learning strategies. Integrating academic English into core instruction, and designing instruction with peer interaction as well, peer mediation. So we're going to take a minute to go back to the resource repository. I'm cognizant of time. And if you can click on instruction and intervention and click on self-paced learning module, and then type in the Zoom chat your thoughts about the resource that came up, which is the Professional Learning Community PLC series. And, you know, just look it over briefly and see, you know, type some thoughts about how you might use that in your school. And that is a PLC guide, a coaching guide that goes with the K-3 foundational reading practice guide. So I'm going to click on it too. Great. And these are some of the resources that come up. I jumped ahead. Carol's going to talk about the facilitator's guide I was just talking about. But here, these are a bunch of different resources. Some of them, these are all kind of self-paced modules, and you can kind of, if you want to, you know, think about or reflect on or type in the chat how you might use some of these resources back in your school. For instance, with some of the self-paced modules, I've seen, you know, there'd be kind of like flipped classrooms with professional learning communities where they look at the resource first, and then they come to their PLC to discuss the resource. I know, Carol, you've probably seen these resources used a number of ways.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons that we selected this. I think that was a mistake in our slide, you know, with the PLC listed on there. But the self-paced modules that the IRIS Center has on there are great ones to use as you're working with teachers on that continual basis to implement evidence-based practices. So it's a great resource to have in your toolkit. All right, there was just one question asking about the PowerPoint, and I said that would be emailed out to the participants. I think Honor said that would be coming out as well. All right, so let's go ahead. We have just a few more minutes, so let's finish this up. I don't know why it's not letting me. There we go. Now it went. Okay, so we'll wrap up the elements with the professional development and job embedded collaborative learning objectives. So you can see these areas that are on here now, high quality professional development, job embedded PD, coaching, professional learning collaboration, and well-articulated professional development plan. So we've talked about most of these already. The one topic button, the well-articulated professional development plan, that's just something that we found that effective leaders are looking at articulating a professional development plan over the year, making sure that all of these pieces are fitting together. So not that we're offering a professional development workshop in one area and then on a monthly basis focusing on something else, but how is this plan all working together? And is that articulated with all the teachers and staff members that are involved in it? So this slide, just reasons and outcomes. So increased awareness, so recognizing the importance of the new information, making sure that there's conceptual understanding, so gaining the understanding on the, not only the how, but I always talk about the why as well. Do they understand why they're using something? The application and problem solving in the classroom. So that's that ongoing. So are we providing that opportunity that they're applying it and that they have the opportunity to problem solve when it's not working well, and what it is, and how it fits in real life, in real application within your building. And then that skill attainment. So how do you know that you're there? You know, how do you know that you're actually applying something, in the most effective way? So those are the pieces that you should be looking at as far as the outcomes for your PD. And we look for that within these types of professional development. What's happening within your workshop? How is it looking as far as that support and that coaching? And how is that looking within your professional learning communities? I particularly like this graphic as it's talking about, you see that workshops is small, coaching is a little bit bigger, and professional learning communities is even bigger. So thinking about making sure that that's kind of what the timing looks like throughout your year with professional development, and it's included in all of those pieces. So again, if you go to the resource repository and you were to click on the professional development and job embedded collaborative learning piece, and if you go to the guide, this is the one that's going to go to that PLC facilitator's guide. And it's one that we've seen used really well by leadership within the building. And particularly if you go to page Roman numeral 3, so little III, if you go to that page, you'll see a 5-step process for the PLC process on what this could look like as you're building that professional development that we've been talking about on a monthly basis. So Lauren is showing you where this is at. There are also, with as she's going to that page and as you're exploring that too, there's also some videos that are aligned with this facilitator's guide. And again, this facilitator guide is specifically aligned with that IES practice guide, the foundational reading skills in K-3. So there's all kinds of resources, but these 5-step process is what we've been talking about that should be implemented within your collaborative learning environment. So that they're debriefing, what are those strategies that you implemented since last month? What are the goals we're going to work on this month? Exploring those new practices and comparing them to what we're doing. So watching videos. I have a school that videotapes after 4 years of doing this. Now they're going in and they videotape each each other, and they bring that every single month, and they watch each other's videotapes. So they develop that trust where whatever their goal is for what they're looking at this month, they look at that, each other's videos. They look at exemplar videos in relation, and then they experiment with any new strategies that they learn throughout that, and then they go back and they implement within the next month, and they start that process again. So it's a great resource if you're looking to improve your professional development or your PLCs for professional learning. All right. So obviously, we've had you look at some different things in the resource repository. There's all kinds of resources. So we were trying to, in our 2 hours that we had, we were trying just to get you to explore by guiding you to some of those resources that are on there. But for each of those elements, there's a lot of different resources that you would be able to go back and find other resources to help support developing your MTSSR systems of support. So Lauren, I'm trying to go back. I wonder if you need to click on the screen. There we go. All right, so I don't see any more questions. Certainly, if you want to put anything in the chat box about the elements or about the resources, we'll make sure that we refer to it before we end this out as well. We will be sending out an electronic survey on the webinar. We do want your feedback. Like we said, we're a very, very new center, so we're developing resources as we speak. We're developing resources. We're going to be continuing to add to our website. We'll be putting different training modules so that we can go deeper with each of those topic areas that we have discussed during the webinar today as well. A couple more areas that can support you on the Lead for Literacy cover page, homepage. So if you go back to the homepage that you start on it by going to leadforliteracy.org, if you scroll to the bottom, you can enter your email and sign up for a monthly newsletter. And within that monthly newsletter, they will let you know in that new newsletter any new resources or modules or supports that we're providing for leadership. So you'll get that right to your email. So any reminder of new things that are coming up or things, resources that we're directing you to. So we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the website. We do have a Facebook page. So it's at Lead for Literacy on Facebook. We have a Twitter handle at Lead for Literacy as well. And then there is an email that's on there as well. So if you have any direct questions that you want to email, that's available for you there. The good thing about the Facebook and the Twitter is any new resources that come up or any exciting things that we've vetted, any additional training opportunities that you can attend are also usually highlighted within the Facebook and Twitter page as well. So if you use social media, those are two other things. We definitely welcome you to join. So with that, we'll wrap it up and we'll turn it back over to Honor. So we have our email on here and again, our website address. So we really thank everybody for staying with us and joining us for this webinar.
Yes, Carol and Lauren, on behalf of NAESP, this has been a wonderful partnership. Just so you all know, NAESP has partnered with the University of Oregon, with the this center here with Carol and Lauren with AIR to put on this virtual summit on literacy. It has been a wonderful opportunity for all of us to get new resources and get some more information. We hope that all of you will take a look more closely at the center and the Lead for Literacy website and the other resources. And please feel free to contact Carol and Lauren.